2024 is the year of podcasts, and we want to let you know about a brand new show that is live right now. Join with me to share the good news about the Worthy of Everything podcast. It's just one of the two hosts, Jedra Lasso. Jedra, you've been working on this podcast in the background. Our team has been very excited as we've been preparing for its launch. How does it feel to know that the episodes finally are out there and we're moving forward every single week?
It is so exciting, and I am just excited to see where God takes it. And I have so much hope that it is going to be an incredible blessing to the listeners.
Amen, amen. But as I understand it, this is a show tackling the issues of mental health through the lens of the gospel. Can you share just a little bit more about the heart and the intent and who you're really trying to serve through the Worthy of Everything podcast?
So I personally was freed from depression, and as I've come to understand my freedom from sin and identity in Christ, I start to recognize all these amazing gifts that God has given us. So yeah, just exploring and hearing awesome testimonies about how to walk out true intimacy with a loving father who pursues his kids.
Oh man, sounds like a good time. If you want to check out the show, lovereality.org/podcasts, and look for the Worthy of Everything show.
The world doesn't think that the gospel can change your life, but we know that it can. And that's why we want you to hear these stories, stories of transformation, stories of freedom, people getting free from sin and healed from sin because of Jesus. This is Death to Life.
Sin was not the result of a careless night of selfish passion. He is the byproduct of God's loving heart, who saw him before the world was created, and he saw Finn for himself. And Finn was not an accident. He was intended from the beginning.
Yo, welcome to the Death to Life podcast. My name is Richard Young, and today's episode is with my sister, Jody. But before we get into Jody, I'm going to ask you to stop what you're doing right now and go rate the podcast on Apple. Give it 5 stars. Remember, if you don't give it 5 stars, I'm inclined to believe you're a hater. You don't want that on you. You're not a hater. So go and give it 5 stars and write a review, and so that you end up on my Instagram feed, RIYoung31. Yeah, and if you're not following me on Instagram, what is you doing, baby? We putting out gold, and then you could see your review from Apple. I mean, it's really the move. But today's episode, Jody is hilarious. I love talking with her, and she's so honest and real, and her story is heartbreaking and at the same time beautiful. And you're going to love it. You're going to want to send it to your peoples. You're going to be like, hey, peoples, listen to Jody. So that's what we're going to do right now. Buckle up, strap in. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all. So Jody, tell me, where does your story start? You've heard enough of these podcasts. That's the question I ask.
Yeah, I've known God my whole life. I was raised in an Adventist family with parents who both are second generation Adventists, and maybe third on my mom's. I'm not sure. But at least second generation, my parents. And so I grew up going to Sabbath school and church like my
whole life. Where'd you
grow up? Oh, so I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville.
And yeah.
Good old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills.
Okay. Yes.
Do you know that song?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I won't sing. I want to sing it, but I'm not going to.
My kids love it. They belt it out.
Oh, yeah, because you're in Tennessee. I forgot about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and so I'm like, hey, kids, this is a song about a girl who was a half cat, half... What is the...
I guess I don't listen to it.
Wish I was on good old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills. Mm-hmm. All right, we're not going to add this in the podcast. Just kidding, we are. You're from Knoxville. You grew up with parents that are Adventists.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up in Knoxville. We moved to Nova Scotia, Canada when I was 2. And we lived there until I was in 5th grade. I was like 9 when we moved to Ontario, Canada. So we've moved a lot But my like beginnings of my life that I remember were in Nova Scotia.
Wow.
Do you know where that is?
Is it up and to the right?
It is. It's up and all the way to the right. Yeah.
So is it a lot of French there or no?
Probably as much as Spanish is here. They try to teach it to you in school. And there are some people who speak French, but everyone just speaks English. There are provinces in Canada. There's Quebec is primarily French speaking, but that's not where I lived.
So how old were you when you got there?
2 when we moved.
Okay.
So I don't really remember. I don't remember not living there. Yeah.
And so you grew up going to Sabbath school. Guess who's come to Sabbath school? Jody. You knew all of that stuff. So
yeah, we went to a really small church that I think was like people started because it was rural. And so they wanted to start a church like closer to where they lived. And so it was just a small church with some families and we like rented out. I think it was a community center. And so that's where I remember going. The end.
Keep going. Tell me more.
Yeah. So yeah, we went to Sabbath school and church and I just remember we did the whole Adventist thing. Popcorn, fruit, salad, peanut butter and toast on Friday night and maybe also Saturday night. And it was a good childhood. I have really good memories of going to church and Sabbath school. And I would say we were on the like middle to conservative side, but I don't think we were like all the way conservative. But we definitely weren't like the more liberal Adventists. And we kept the Sabbath like from sundown till sundown. But I remember going, this feels Adventist to me, but like going for walks, nature walks with like a plastic bag from the grocery store and collecting things, plants, whatever. And then you come back and you compare. And if anyone else has the same thing you have, you don't get a point. But if you have something unique, you get a point.
That I don't know. I've never done that. That's an Adventist thing, you think?
Maybe it's just a our family thing. Now that
maybe because of nature or something?
Yeah. But yeah, we would do that. I know they tried to make it special.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So how long did you live in Canada?
So like my whole growing up years, all through high school, I graduated from high school in Ontario from Kingsway College. Which is not a college.
Call it in Oshawa?
Mm-hmm. Oshawa, Ontario. Yes.
Yeah, I've been there.
And my dad he worked at Kingsway. So we were like faculty brats and we lived on campus and all that.
Who was God to you as you were growing up? How did he feel about Jody? Was he cool with you? Were you cool with him?
I don't know if I ever thought about him as like that in relation to me. He was in the Uncle Arthur's Bedtime Stories. And he was in like little ones like Baby Moses, like Noah's Ark.
The Blue Books. Yeah, those are Uncle Arthur. You just thought God was the God of Moses, the God of the Bible, but not there was not like a real tie into a relationship with you or?
No, he was in those books. And then like when I would imagine him, he was like a very big person in the sky up there. Mm-hmm. But I know I prayed to him because my sister and I, we went off into the forest once and we went really far. We lived up on a mountain, like in the middle of nowhere. And we went really far into the forest and got lost. And I remember like praying together and our prayer was, "Dear Jesus, when we open our eyes, please let us be back home." And when I opened my eyes, we were still there. And that was just like, I remember that a lot.
How did it hit you?
Just, yeah, like a punch in my gut. I don't know. Like I prayed for that and we really need help. And he didn't do what I asked him to do. And now that I'm telling you this story, that'll tie in nicely with another story from really recent that I'll tell you later. But yeah, he didn't plunk us back in our yard. We did, and we found our way home. But that really bugged me that he didn't transport us. I do remember that.
Yeah, that becomes tough, right? Because you hear all these stories.
Yeah.
And you see it, and you're like, what is prayer? How does prayer actually work?
Yeah, I think it Yeah, it was confusing. And I remember like we had these books about miracles and all those Bible stories about miracles. So on one hand, God can do anything, but on the other hand, he will do nothing for me.
He makes an axe head float.
Yeah.
But why can't he get me to beam back to my house?
Yeah, bringing ravens. Wow, as I'm telling you this, I think this is a very key part. I wasn't even thinking about this until right now. I think this is key to my story. So yeah, he was something I thought about and prayed about, but it was, let's say, gumball machine-esque, probably.
Little Santa?
Yeah, no, we never believed in Santa. Are you kidding? But if Santa did exist, then yes, maybe.
If you didn't you didn't believe in Santa, did you celebrate Christmas?
We did. Yeah, we celebrated Christmas. We did.
Okay. So as Jody is getting into high school, what kind of stuff was she up to? Was she a people pleaser? Was she super insecure? What were the lies that the enemy was just filling your head
with? Yes. Yes. How did you know? I was a people pleaser, and I have been my whole life. I thrive on attention, and like my whole life, that's all I want. I just wanted attention from the people that I wanted it from. And at first it would be like my family, my parents. But then, yeah, as I got into high school, yeah, I wanted attention from boys and everyone, but definitely was a people pleaser. And I have most of my life cared way more about what other people thought about me and said about me than what I thought about myself or how I felt. Like, I didn't really think about my own thoughts.
Give me an example. What is something that happened that you were just like, maybe you didn't know how much of a people pleaser you are, but like that just...
So I don't know if this, I'll probably think of an example as I'm telling you this, but I know that like my goal in life, like for as long as I can remember, was to be accepted and to be cool and for people to like me. And I don't know where that...
What was cool?
Like those tearaway pants with the stripes on the sides. That's the first thing I remember like wanting to wear. But
like basketball warm-up pants?
Yeah, like those Adidas.
You're like, God, make me cool. And he's just go to Penny's and get the Adidas pants.
No, but let me back up because I always wanted attention and affirmation and affection and to be cool. And I think it started because growing up, we grew up very sheltered and in a very rural like community. And so I always wanted to be like the normal / cool people. And when we moved to Ontario from Nova Scotia, when I was like in the middle of fifth grade, it was really traumatizing because we get to this, to me, it felt like a huge school, which it was just a normal like Adventist school. It just didn't have, it had more than 9 people, which was the school we came from. But like, I felt so out of place. It's the middle of the school year. I don't know anybody. And they're all wearing Northern Getaway clothes. Which,
what is that a brand?
It was a brand, yeah. And I don't know if it's like specific to Canada.
Yeah, I think it is. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, but it was, and like it was fifth graders, so it was niche. So yeah, like everyone had these really nice clothes, and we were wearing like thrift shop things, and nothing looked nice. And so it started then, like just wanting to be like everyone else and wanting to be accepted and just fit in and be cool. And now I forgot what your question was. But yeah, Jody was a people pleaser and wanted to fit in and just wanted to be like everybody else, but felt so not.
When you move to this place and you want to be what you want to be cool, did this hit you? Oh, this is so important to me. Or you just, no, this was your sister like you, or was she different?
I have 2 sisters. I don't know if you know that.
I did.
I have an older sister. She's about 2.5 years older than me. And then I have a younger sister. My older sister is named Michelle, and my younger sister is Kim. And Kim, she's my...
Yeah.
She's...
What's up, Kim? If you're listening to this, we're talking about you.
Yeah. So she's 6 years younger than me. So she was born by now, but she and I weren't close back then. We are now. What was the question?
We're talking about how you realized that you were a people pleaser.
Oh, yeah.
Or if that even hit you, or that's just what you were going after.
Yeah, I don't think I ever thought about it. But looking back, I know for sure that's all I cared about was like for people to accept me and think I was cool. Everything I did was like for others. So,
were you confident?
No. Very shy and very awkward. Like I am now. Yeah, I was very shy, very awkward, like just super like I wasn't homeschooled, but like those vibes probably when we moved. Yeah. Anyway, so that's how it was. And that's how elementary school went for me. And school was hard. I was like a horrible student and I hated school always. I just remember sitting and staring out the window and looking at the leaves and thinking, I wish I was a leaf because I'd be outside.
So you get there, you don't like school, continue, yeah. You're going into high school.
Okay.
You want to be in the in crowd.
Yeah. So when high school started, I was going to turn a new leaf and be an amazing student. And I had grown up as like this faculty kid. And our dad,
what did your dad teach?
He was not a teacher. He was a maintenance guy and he drove the buses and did class sponsoring and stuff like that. So he was really involved. He loved like the guys that worked for him and he never had any sons. So I think I shouldn't speak for him, but I think that those were like all his sons, all the maintenance guys. And growing up, like he would take us on different things. They would have those different games they'd play that they play at academies at night, running around in the dark. Like he'd take us sometimes to hide in the forest with him for some of the different like scavenger games. You know what I'm talking about.
No, I'm just thinking about all the awesome maintenance guys that I've known that worked at.
Oh, yeah. No, he's and cool.
Salt of the earth,
yeah.
People.
Oh, let me tell you. Sorry. Quick little story for my dad. He loved driving. He still does it. He's still doing it. He loves driving.
For
not at Kingsway, but he's at Pisgah. He's at Mount Pisgah Academy. But okay. He would have a little basket of like prizes up at the front and he'd have the intercom and he'd tell horrible jokes. He'd like have quiz questions and he'd toss back like prizes to people and lead out songs. He was fun.
I love this.
But
man.
It was super annoying as a student to have your dad. That's a whole other thing. But yeah, he always seemed.
No, he's the best. I will not hear any slander about Mr. Knowles.
Yeah, but he always seemed to drive the bus for my like trips. So annoying.
Dad? Yeah. Why are you making these jokes,
so embarrassing. Anyway, so he would take us with him when he'd do different fun things. And so I saw like different students and how they behaved. And I knew which kind of student I was going to be, excuse me, when I went to Kingsway. I was going to be really involved and I was going to be like into everything. And so I did. I was like on the essay and I was involved in all their programs. And I was like one of those good, like dependable, like smiley people that loves everything that's happening. Yeah. Awesome. And so that's how it started out. And I was going to be a good student too. And I accomplished that by like making really strong eye contact and nodding my head a lot. And some people thought I was really smart because I did that. But then
did you sit in the T of the class?
No, what's that?
Sitting in the T is sitting in the front row or the middle row back. The good students sit in the T. The bad students sit in the U, which is the back row and the
sides. I probably
sides.
Was in the U, but I'm trying to think now if I didn't think about it, really. But yeah, so anyway, I wasn't really a good student, but maybe I fooled a couple people like in the beginning. In fact, I was so bad that like I missed out on some fun trips and stuff because my grades were bad enough in my senior year. But anyway, yeah, so like I was a pleasure, I think. I think all the teachers thought I was a pleasure, but I did go through some hard times in high school, and it goes along with wanting to be cool and fitting in. And like, there was a lot of angsty students and they were really troubled and getting into bad things, and I hung out with them for whatever reason.
What drew you?
They were so cool. And like, they sometimes cut class, and they were nice. They were friendly to me. And I was on the gym team the first couple of years, and they seemed to gravitate to the gym team. I think that kind of student. So I became friends with these people who were not so good. They weren't into such good things, but I never strayed. Like, I knew I was never going to be doing anything bad. I was so good.
You were like, I think we have a lot in common. When I was in college, I never got in trouble. I never got in trouble in high school. I never got in trouble in college. But I was always so interested in what was going on.
Yeah, that. I want to like.
And then I loved gossip too. Loved gossip. And so me and my other buddy, who loved gossip just as much as I did, but was a good kid as well, we would just get together and we'd play this game. We'd go to each other's dorms room and we'd play this game called Who's Doing It? And we're like, yo, who's doing it? And then he would tell me who he had heard that was doing it. And then I would tell him who I had heard who was doing it. Neither of us were doing it, but we wanted to know so bad because we lived, I don't know if we lived vicariously through it. We were such good kids, but we wanted to know
who's
so bad.
Who's doing it?
That's who's your doing new podcast. It? Not a good game to play, guys. That is gossip.
Who's doing it with Richard
who's
Young?
Who's doing it?
Oh, no, that's not
bad. No, that is.
Natalie is.
Not who's doing it yet. Okay. Okay. This podcast is taking a left. All right.
Where were we?
Oh. Keep going. Okay, so.
I need to.
You said Natalie.
Oh, did you just get it? Oh.
No, I just think you're hilarious.
Okay. It's important to know I was hanging out with these kids who were like not super into not doing drugs. And I just had the biggest crush on one of these guys. And okay, I should rephrase because I don't actually know what they were doing. I just think they were probably doing some marijuana. And maybe drinking. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I just had the biggest crush on one of them. And so he became my first boyfriend. And so I was like this really good kid. And I was dating this guy who was probably smoking weed. But that's like kind of who I was. And I, for whatever reason, I just craved the attention of the bad boys or what was considered the bad boys back then. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for later. Too, some more things that are going to come up later. And I don't know.
Why do you think that was, why the bad boy?
Good question. I think the thrill of it and the excitement of somebody who was different from me and cooler than me, because that it seemed so cool then. I didn't think smoking weed was cool. I thought it was gross, but he just seemed so cool. It was so flattering to like date the cool guy.
what do you think about that?
My parents are really good at not saying much. They did that right with boyfriends that me and my sisters had. They really stayed out of it and didn't really say one way or the other how they felt. And it was intentional. Because my mom said one time, like one of our friends had this girlfriend for a really long time and then they broke up. But the mom of our friend fell in love with his girlfriend. And then when they broke up, he like had to break up. It was almost like he broke up with his mom. And so my mom did say, you'll never get that for me. I'll never get that involved in your boyfriends. So I appreciate that about her. They just stood back and let us do whatever and just watched it play out.
So you're with the bad boy.
Oh, and I don't want to say like they just did whatever. We were never allowed to have a boy in our room, ever.
Oh, not and Mr. Knowles. Didn't even not really, under Mr. Knowles.
They didn't even really come to our house. Everyone called our house Fort Knowles. Because
I love that.
Nothing got past.
I hope they call my house Fort Young.
Yeah.
When Nola gets to be of
there
age.
There you go. Anyway, I feel like I've dwelled on this for long enough. Are we done with this?
No, I'm enjoying it. No, so okay, so then dating the bad boy, you were going on with
that
story.
Yeah. Okay, so I dated the bad boy and then like he broke up with me in an email over the summer, whatever.
Classic.
And then, yeah, I don't know, then the rest of high school happened. But yeah, I tended towards the ones that weren't so nice. And that's the end of boys for high school. But like, I just really wanted to be accepted and liked and cool and all that. I guess I wanted so bad to be like, to be somebody with something like a story to tell or just something interesting. Cause I'm like, I'm so boring. Like I've got nothing. And some of my friends were cutting themselves and I'm sure they had like real reasons to do it. And so I didn't even know it was a thing until I saw like this girl with cuts on her wrists. And around this time I had a friend who was like probably an alcoholic and he was going through a lot of stuff and coming over to our house and falling asleep in a chair because he was drunk and passed out. He would be like drinking in class and stuff. And he was just going through a lot and he would confide in me all kinds of things. And it was a lot. And I remember thinking, my friend cuts herself. Maybe that's for me. Like maybe that's something that I do because this burden of hearing about everyone else's sorrows, maybe I'm going to do that. And, but also maybe that'll make me like somebody like edgy and have a problem because problems are cool in high school. I don't know. It seemed.
I think I've talked about this before on here. Lie from about gossip is, and since we're talking about who's doing it in the gossip game, it's if you have information to tell, you're important. Mm-hmm. And if you're receiving that information, you're also important. Mm. So both people, the person gossiping and the person receiving the gossip, they're getting a little high from being, oh, I have information, so I'm important. And oh, this person's sharing that information, I must be important. And so drama also means that. I'm important. My life has some substance to it. And obviously, you can see straight through to the lie that you would think those are the things that make you important. And if you don't have those things, then you're not important. Yeah. That's why gossip is so powerful. Because it's a longing to have, to be important.
Yes, that's that. You hit that nail with the hammer on the head of the nail.
And you desperately wanted to be important.
Yeah. So yeah, I started cutting myself and I'm sure it was extremely distressing to my parents when they found out and sent me off to counseling promptly.
Because you thought you would be... like there would be some depth to you.
That's how it started. It was like, oh, ooh, attention. Oh, I see these cuts on Jody. She must have something going on. She must be important is how it started. And then it was like, oh, I read about it. And it was like, oh, people do this because they are able to feel like the pain when they do it. And it like makes the pain real. And so then I just started doing it because I did. I had real pain, but it was like others' pain. I took it all on myself and I like, they're all like, don't tell anyone. You can't tell anyone this. And so it did feel good to have a way to like, just get it out. But I do think it started as like kind of attention seeking behavior, but then it quickly turned into something I was hiding. Yeah. I definitely didn't want like people to see it after a while.
Yes.
I don't know how serious is serious. Like I never was hospitalized. I never had infections or anything. I have some scars still from it.
Were you compelled to do it? Like, even when you're like, I don't want to do it anymore, but then you were compelled to do it?
That's a good question. I don't know. I do. It's funny because my brain also is not very good. I don't have a very clear memory of it anymore, but I do remember feeling like a sort of a satanic presence in the room. I do remember telling someone that story once, like the air would feel thick, like with evil. It was scary to think about, wow, what am I doing? But it was hard to really think about what was really happening and how I felt about it, because it did start out as like kind of attention seeking and then it evolved into I don't know what. But I quickly realized like this was my, I'm trying to think, 11th grade. And by the end of 11th grade, I realized, okay, I can't just be like in college, or I can't be someone's mom doing this. I have to stop at some point. So thinking about being someone's mom, I was like, okay, I'm done. This is stupid. I don't want to do this anymore. So I stopped doing it.
Okay. So you get down to college. You choose Southern Adventist University.
Yes. I chose Southern because most of my friends were going there. And my sister was already there. And I'm trying to think if this was part of the reason. There was also like this guy there that my sister was friends with. And I met him when I went to visit Southern. And I just thought he was the coolest.
Jody chooses to go to Southern because she's like, well, like there's...
That was a bonus. But yeah, I chose it because they had an art program. And I was interested in art at the time.
Shout out to Southern's art program.
Yeah, they do. They really do. Yeah, so I went to Southern as a fine arts major. And I stayed in my room all the time. Like I said, a lot of my friends from high school went. And my roommate was someone that I went to high school with. And we just hung out with each other. I really didn't branch out that much. I hated it. I didn't really want to be there. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. Art was horrible. I liked it until I had to take it for classes and have deadlines. And I realized really fast that I wasn't going to support myself because there was always someone better than me and faster than me. And I didn't enjoy it anymore. So I just felt really lost that first year at Southern. And I had a really good advisor, John Williams, and he encouraged me to take a year off. Like when I suggested that was something I was interested in, he like encouraged me to do that. And so I signed up to be a student missionary the following year.
Palau?
No, where'd you go? I went to Zambia, Africa. That was also, I have family that lives there. My uncle and my aunt are at the place where I went and they've lived there for like years. So that was why I chose that place.
That was really good.
So that year, I would say my relationship with God became the most real that it had ever been. It mm-hmm. became more like I really had to depend on God. And I could see I was like faced with situations where others were forced to depend on God. And I felt like for the first time I saw him at work and like that he could really help people and like that it like he could be active in someone's life. And that was the first time I'd been far away from friends and family, even though I had family there and there was other SMs from Southern. I was away from my close friends and family that I'd always been around. So it was a really good experience, and it was also key in me deciding that I wanted to become a nurse because we worked with the nurses in the clinic there, and we would go out into the mm-hmm. bush where there is no access. That's like miles and miles to get to the nearest hospital, and so we would bring the clinic to them. And it was just really cool to help out in a small way. I didn't have skills, but the nurses like let us help them weigh babies and give medicines and stuff. And it made me think that I would like to do that. So that, I would say my SM year was like perfect for figuring out what I actually wanted to do. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So go back to Southern. I know now what I want to do, but I spend one more semester at Southern kind of, I don't want to say wasting time because I started taking nursing like prerequisites, but I wasn't doing super good in school still, and I was still not sure. And so I like wasted one more semester and then stopped going. And partly that was because of some stuff that was going on at home. While I was gone, I'm trying to think, I think it was before I left even, some things happened with my family, and my dad no longer had employment with the church. And so we weren't going to have subsidy anymore, which if you're an Adventist person with subsidy, that's huge for going to an Adventist university. So we weren't going to be able to afford Southern anymore. And so, yeah, when I came back, I don't think I had subsidy that one semester, and it was really hard. And I felt like I was wasting, it mattered now if I wasted time and money. So not that it didn't before, it hurt a little more. So I dropped out of school, not dropped out, but I stopped attending. and got a job. And I worked for a gynecologist in Collegedale for a couple years, just full time as like a medical assistant.
And you're like 20 years old?
I 21? Was 19 or 20. Yeah. I think I was probably 20. Yeah. So yeah, I just worked full time, and me and my older sister shared an apartment, and I just did that. And that was really good because I was in like an office. I saw the nurses in there and saw what they did. And I knew for sure, like, I wouldn't be satisfied until I got to do what they got to, what they were doing at work. And this kind of ties into later when I listened to the Death to Life podcast, because I worked with a nurse named Gabrielle Bourgeois, now Osorio, who is a sister-in-law to Floor.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
And I would see Floor and Gabrielle around Southern my freshman year, walking around, looking all cool. And we didn't hang out.
Floor's still super cool.
Yeah, I agree. And Gabrielle is too.
It's cool.
Yeah. So like I noticed them around anyway, and I ended up working with Gabby at that office. And that'll, I don't know, maybe be important later. But yeah, so it was good. And then this is where I think like I can see God starting to really work in my life, because I was like fired from my job for something I didn't do.
What'd you get fired for?
I wasn't a nurse, but the doctor said, called someone and given them like erroneous lab results from their like pap smear. But here's the thing, I wasn't a nurse, so I wasn't allowed to call with lab results. And so I hadn't done it, but she blamed me and fired me.
You didn't do any?
I had nothing to do with it. I didn't even know what happened. But she was like,
did you tell them? You're like, no, like that wasn't me.
I think in the moment I was just so like, what? That I couldn't say anything. But I did talk to her later and explain to her like, no, why it couldn't be true. And I had like evidence. And then she offered my job back and I declined to accept it.
Why'd you decline?
And this is where it's cool. So while I was working for her, I took a few classes part-time, like at the community college, trying to get towards going to nursing school.
Sure.
And I was close to being able to apply to the community college. And so when she fired me, I was like, okay, I'm just going to go full time and just go for it. Then this is my sign. So I was going to just go to the community college. However, around the same time, my dad was offered an opportunity at Highland Academy. So this whole, for a couple of years, they were wandering and he was doing other jobs, but not working for the Adventist Church. And that's a whole other story. Maybe if you talk to my younger sister sometime, she can tell you her whole experience with that. That was a wild thing that happened with them. But yeah, my dad got offered a job at Highland Academy. My younger sister was supposed to be going to, it was her dream to go to that school in BC, Fountain View, because she played violin and they're like really, they have a great music program. But Highland wouldn't accept my dad unless my sister went to Highland. Because it looks bad, I guess, if your staff members have like their children going somewhere else. So she knew that. And my parents just left it up to her and said, you can go to Fountain View. It's your dream. And, you know, it's fine. We won't go to Highland. Or you can go. And that's like great, too. And my sister, oh, she knew that if my dad had the job at Highland, that I would be able to go back to Southern, because we'd have subsidy again. And so she chose to go to Highland and gave up her dream.
What a wonderful person.
I know. She, yeah, it was a really selfless. I mean, she was like a sophomore in high school or a freshman when she made this decision. And she knew it would be better for more people if she did that decision. So it was just really cool. So suddenly I was back at Southern. And pretty soon got in the nursing program and all
That's
that.
Awesome.
So coming back to Southern was amazing because by now I'd had life experience. I'd been to another country. I'd supported myself for a couple of years. I knew like what it took and what I needed to do and what I wasn't willing to do anymore. I knew I needed to advance myself so I could actually afford to live. And so yeah, I had real purpose back to Southern. And nursing school was amazing because I was really interested in it. It turns out I'm a really good student when I'm interested. I don't know. Did you find that?
Yeah, I'm just only interested in basketball. So, no, I love history too. So I became a history educator.
Yeah. And not to say that I was like straight A's or whatever, but like for who I am, like I did really well.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so, yeah, nursing school is amazing. And I just want to shout out one teacher because I'm here. Christine Monayoung was our adult three professor, and it's like the hardest class. And I did really bad on a test, and I went to her and she helped like figure out some of the questions I got wrong. And she said to me, "You're a smart girl." And going back to what I told you about elementary school and high school, like I had really bad grades and stuff. And something that I knew for sure about myself was that I was not smart. And so maybe part of what I was seeking, affirmation-wise, trying to be cool, I don't know, trying to make up for what I lacked in the smarts department. I don't know. But it was so sweet to have her say that, even though I came to her with, I had done really poorly on a test. And she still said, "I'm a smart girl." And that has stayed with me for till now.
It's amazing when someone speaks life over you, right?
Amazing. Yeah. And I think not to get too far ahead, but like, it's amazing. Yeah. To hear someone say something about who you are that's positive, even if it doesn't seem true.
Right.
like that, I had wings. It was amazing. Yeah. So that was college. And it's important now, I think, to let you know that I had a boyfriend when I graduated from Southern.
Shout out to that guy.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, we weren't quite dating, but we were talking. He was a little younger, so he was still in school, but we were dating and it was going great. He was like amazing. It was young love. And yeah, just like really great. The only thing was I had these expectations. This is where the real story begins, Richard.
What were your expectations?
I was a girl. I was done school. I had gone to Southern. I thought I had my man lined up so I could leave Southern with what people go to Southern
that
for.
That MRS degree.
There you go. Yeah, so we had several friends who had started dating like around the same time we had. And they were getting married. And this is like a couple years after, like a year and a half after we started dating, I think. My timeline could be slightly off. So I was like, I'm like 20, how old was I? 25, 26, 27, 26. Anyway, something like that. And so I'm like, I'm old. My eggs are drying up. We need to get married. And those were my expectations. But he was a little younger, not done school yet. So it was like, okay, we got to wait, but like we're on track for that. He really, oh, I'm going to give him away. But I'm going to say great things about him, so it's okay. I won't say his name, but he really liked to climb rocks. And that was just his passion. And that's okay. I like to climb some rocks too. We had fun doing that
together. I totally know who it is now that you said that he liked to climb rocks.
I know that you don't, but some people would.
I'm like, oh, rock climber from Southern? No, I'm...
Could be. That's only every person at Southern.
Yeah, so like, I'm like...
Oh, okay, good. The secret's still safe.
It's safe.
No, but yeah, he really liked.
And he's a prince of a man. He's a prince of a man. He's great.
Yeah,
dude.
I just loved him. I really did. I just adored him. And because I had dated some guys just because they were interested in me, it's different when you like them back.
I think it's better.
It is. It's better. So, yeah, we were dating, but I was getting a little, shall we say, anxious about, okay, like, where's this going? Let's make sure it goes to marriage. He likes rocks a lot. That's fine, but let's focus on school and get done with that so we can get married. And I was really hurt.
You're applying the pressure?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it, but I wasn't even that pressure-y yet, but don't worry, it's coming. So he went off to camp. And he was gone like the first summer we were dating. We dated long distance because he was at camp. So the next summer rolls around and I'm working like a dog and he's just having his fun college life still. And so I suggested like it might be nice if he stuck around the next summer, like so we could have the summer together and he not go away and climb rocks. And he agreed, but didn't tell me that at some point, like the camp director had approached him and been like, can you come to camp
and teach the kids how to climb rocks?
And that he had said yes, but hadn't told me. And so summer came and he had to tell me, and he told me, and I was like, I was disappointed. I was upset. Like, why didn't you tell me? We talked about like we were going to hang out this summer. But like ultimately, I was like, okay, go do your thing. Climb the rocks. And then I was going to go visit him. So that all happened, but it really melted down when I came to visit because I had expectations. We were dating. I was going to come out. We were going to have a fun time together away from everyone else. But we just climbed rocks with all the staff members. We were all like up in camp. Like we never went off and did our own thing. And it was just so not what I expected. And so the fights began. And they didn't really stop. He went back to Southern in the fall, and I had been thinking for a while I wanted to go travel nursing because that's like, when else do you do it? But when you're single and like you can just go wherever you want. And I was a little perturbed by then, and I was like, you know what? He goes off and does whatever he wants in the summertime. I'm gonna go and do whatever I want. So there.
In your face.
I didn't, and I don't think I even said it to him like that. It was just like, oh, I'm going to go do this thing. You just enjoy your last year at Southern and we'll just do long distance. But I was a little mad, seething inside. So I did. I went on my first travel assignment. I quit my job and I went to Nebraska.
I've been there.
Yeah. So I took the first assignment I could get. It was a good experience in some ways, but in many ways it was terrible because for the first time I was alone with no friends that I had known before. I made new friends and away from my Adventist bubble. There was no church, no Adventist church there.
Before we go further, who's God at this point? Mid-20s?
Yes. Good question. So God was probably the person that I felt like I should do devotionals with in the mornings, but didn't and felt guilty about it. And I church hopped with my friends and went to church for the social part. But yeah, God didn't really have, I don't think I had like a personal relationship other than sometimes I might find the time to sit down and pray or read something. Or if something went wrong, I'd probably go hiking by myself and cry in the forest and go to a special tree and say a prayer. So kind of like that. And I also, interestingly enough, when I got into this relationship that I thought might be headed to marriage, I like all my like conservative Adventism like ideas came up, and my boyfriend wanted to play poker with his friends on Friday night, and it was like morally so bad for me. Like I couldn't believe that he wanted to do that. And we had a fight about that. So that's where I was at. That's wrong. You can't do that. How dare you? Because I was so good.
Sounds like it.
I was such a good person. So, yeah. So that's who God was. Okay. So when I was in Red Cloud is when things really happened. My boyfriend and I were, we just weren't getting along super good. I found out that he lied to me and wasn't enrolled at Southern. It was like his last, I can't remember if it was his last semester or his last year, and then he was going to graduate, but he wasn't passionate about what he was doing and would rather be like climbing rocks, and he couldn't figure out what he wanted to do. And I could be getting some of this wrong, so sorry to him if I am. But yeah, he just didn't enroll in Southern and had told me he was. And so I thought we were on track to like graduate and then get married soon, but he wasn't doing the track.
He's going to be climbing rocks, and there's not going to be a rock on your finger.
We hadn't. Yes, ultimately, no, there was not, but we didn't know it yet. It was upsetting, and so we're fighting about that, but we weren't broken up. But so I had a dog, and I would go to the dog park with my dog. So I was at the dog park one day and met some people, chatted, went home, didn't think anything about it. I got a letter at work shortly after, and it just said travel nurse Jody on it. And they gave it to me. I'm like, what's this? opened it. It was a letter from somebody I had met at the dog park saying, you seem cool. Here's my number. We should hang out sometime. Text me, whatever. So flattering.
Bold move.
Oh, yes. So flattering. And like, yeah, he had to like some like find me and he found me. So wow. Flattering.
You must be important.
Yes, Richard. I felt it. Especially in stark contrast to how my boyfriend was making me feel. Not important because he couldn't even go to school so we could get married. The timing just was superb. So I was super impressed. I want to honor whoever this person is that they took the effort to reach out. And so I texted him back and just said, oh, thank you so much, but I have a boyfriend. So no, thank you.
But I will honor you with this reply. Please do not correspond with me.
Yeah, please stop. Thank you, but stop. Stop it. I don't like this. Stop it. No. Anyway, I told him thank you, but no. And then he was just very persistent. He texted me constantly in a very flirtatious manner, and I loved it. And so eventually, I agreed to meet with him again at the dog park. And after all, nobody could say like that I can't take my dog to the dog park. And if we happened to meet, who's to say that's wrong?
Sounds legit to me.
So we went to the dog park and we met and we talked and it was just wonderful to connect with somebody after being
this
so lonely.
This does not sound legit to me, by the way, dear listener.
It's not. It's terrible. It was horrible. But I was so lonely. It's not an excuse, but I really was lonely. This is what led me to doing this. So lonely and then like, yeah, looking for fulfillment. So he seemed to have it all together. He was a little older than me. He was done school. He was like, he had a home, seemed to have it all together and was interested and persistent. So we hung out a few times. He ended up at my place. And I'm like, how do I lead up to this? I'm just going to say it. We kissed and it was like, good person. Now I'm a horrible person, like a switch. Because
like when this was happening, like when like you could see it coming, but you were acting like you couldn't see it coming.
I mean, I could see it coming, but like I would never do that.
Right. You're a good person.
Yeah. And then it happened. And then immediately I felt really horrible. And I'm now a bad person. And it was a kiss. This sounds like an excuse. He lived really far away because everyone lives far in Nebraska. He did end up spending the night. It was just a kiss, but he spent the night because it was like 3 a.m. and it's far to get home and all this stuff. So that makes things worse though. Who cares if nothing but a kiss happened? Like he spent the night.
In the Victorian age, if you went on a walk with somebody without a chaperone, you would have to get married.
Yeah.
We would get married. But if you spend the night at their crib because you were over there at 3 a.m. How do you explain that to your boyfriend or someone
so
like that?
So I called him immediately. As soon as like the morning light shone through the blinds, I sent him away and called my boyfriend like immediately. And confessed to him what had happened.
Even the kiss.
Everything. Yeah. And he was upset and just
naturally
someone would be. But it wasn't the end of it wasn't the end of us for him. And I'm sure we had more than one conversation about it, but it wasn't like, oh, we're done. It was like, wow, okay. And so he was like, actually, he was supposed to come visit me like in, I don't know, maybe a month from then. He was supposed to come visit. And so it was, I'm coming to visit soon. Let's keep talking about this and we can work through this. That's what it was from his end. But I couldn't. So like, he was okay with it, but I couldn't live with myself. I just couldn't. I remember like a week or two passed, and like I couldn't talk to him. Like I couldn't take his calls. I didn't respond to his texts. I was just wallowing in guilt and condemnation and shame and just, who am I anymore? I don't even know who I am. And looking back, like it was definitely out of proportion to what had happened. But I am looking at it from the context of my current life, which a lot has happened by now.
But so, like, if you've never done something like that,
right,
it will rock your world a little bit.
Yeah. And I don't know if I stressed enough how good of a person I was up until this point.
The goodest.
So I thought. Yeah, it was just horrible. I remember, yeah, being riddled with guilt and shame and feeling so condemned, and I couldn't pray. I couldn't like eat. I lost 10 pounds. It was just a horrible time. And I started questioning, oh, I'm a girl who cheats on her boyfriend. Am I a girl who drinks? Am I a girl who does drugs? Do I get tattoos now? Like, who am I? So it opened up this whole like portal to questioning. Does God even exist? I don't know why that was a question, but it was.
You just kissed a dude.
I know.
God still exists.
I know.
But I'm not making fun of you. I am a little bit, but like, yeah, that rocks you.
Yeah, it really did. So he was like, okay with it, my boyfriend, and not okay with it, but he's, we'll get past this. But he was like, you need to delete that guy's number and not see him anymore. And I was like, of course, yes. And I did. And then I was, after the couple weeks of being feeling guilty and just couldn't talk to him, eventually, like, we did talk and I was like, I know you said you can do it still, but I can't. And so we broke up because I just couldn't. I could not.
The reason you broke up with him was because you...
I think that it was kind of the trigger, but we were already having issues. And I couldn't imagine... I couldn't see a future for us. Mm-hmm.
Because of all of this guilt, shame, and condemnation, it's not like you were thinking super clearly, it seemed like it?
No, I'm sure I wasn't. And I wonder, too, if part of me was just like running away from my problems. Well, I ruined that. I don't know how we can come back from this. So I'm just going to go start over somewhere else.
Do you think there was a part motive in you that liked it and you're like, maybe if I'm not with this guy anymore?
Yeah, it opened my eyes. Like, what else is there out there? It sure is nice to be with somebody who has some direction in their life. And I'm not saying that my boyfriend didn't have direction. He had a direction. It was vertical.
Towards Yosemite.
It was vertically up. But I guess I felt like maybe there was more, or I wondered, okay, maybe I could date some more and see, like, maybe there's a better fit. Yeah, I don't know. And so then, of course, I'm still in Nebraska, lonely as ever. So I still had this guy's, I had like a save, like a call, like in my call log, that I knew was his number, even though I had deleted it. And so, of course, I like got back in touch with this guy and we hung out until I left. But I was really low. I was not myself anymore. And I wasn't sure if I knew who myself was. I would say I was compromised in my choices, but just really low at this point. And so I was there for maybe another month or so, and we hung out a lot, and I was at his house once and found some bottles, like pill bottles, and looked at them. I'm a nurse, but I didn't recognize what they were. So I like looked them up, and they were medications for HIV. And I was like, and I had noticed like he was really like protective of his pills and had left them at his mom's once, and like she went to great lengths to get them to him, and so it made sense now. So I asked him, like, how long have you known that you had HIV? And he was like, I don't have HIV, I have AIDS. Yeah. And at this point we hadn't slept together, but like certainly I would have wanted to know that information anyway. And like there, like we had done other things. And so that was like upsetting, but like we still hung out And then I left. I went to my next assignment in Tucson, Arizona, with no intention of coming back. And we said our goodbyes. But when I was in Arizona, like, I found that I was just as lonely there. And so we were still in contact, and he came to visit me. And we ended up sleeping together. But I was so low by then that it was kind of like I felt like I deserved it. Like, I didn't want to get a sickness, but if I did, I felt like I would have deserved it. And
okay, but now that you're broken up with this guy, you're no longer in a relationship with this guy that you'd been in a relationship. The guilt was still from that, or was the guilt from, like, now your new life that you feel like you deserve?
I don't know. I just felt like really bad. And yeah, I just felt like, well, if something happens to me, I kind of deserve it. And kind of didn't care. And by, like, I don't understand why I went so low, but like by this point, like, I hadn't been talking to my family. I didn't talk to anyone like that I had been friends with. I was like cut off from everybody, and I couldn't pray.
You know what? It sounds crazy. I'll be honest with you. But as I reflect on my life, and I reflect on the first time I did something that I never thought I would do. And looking at yourself, and you're just like, oh, so you're disgusting, huh? Like, I remember just thinking that, like, you're this guy.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, but you're not, I'm not supposed to be this guy.
Yeah.
Because I have a great family. I love God. I really believe I love God. And that thought hits so heavy.
Yeah.
And there's so much shame that it's almost like, who knows where it can take you?
Yeah. And I think I, like I said a lot, how, what a good person I was. I was a very judgmental person until this point. And I thought really harshly of people that I heard about that were promiscuous, or what I thought of as promiscuous. And so maybe that fed into like why I was so upset at myself. It was just a kiss.
Sure.
But like, and growing up, like, it was really, you know, like put into my brain, like that purity and be careful how you dress and, you know, all that stuff. So
you're like, I'm the thing that I've hated, mm-hmm. or I'm the thing that I've judged so harshly.
Yeah.
But it's me.
Yeah, exactly. Which is both bad and good, because on the other hand, it made me think maybe those people weren't as bad as I thought they were. So that's the other side of it.
You know, that's the thing about being forgiven, is that when we see people, you can look at them and you say, well, there go I, but for the grace of God. Like, if I would have been in that situation with that background and with that info, I probably would have done the same thing that they did.
Mm.
You know, they're doing their best. They just don't have the information.
Yeah.
Where before, it's just how dare you? I can't believe you could do that. And so those who are forgiven much love much.
Mm, yes.
Oh. Because they can just see, like, oh, yeah, there go I, but for the grace of God.
Yeah. So, like, there's so much I want to say. I'm so grateful for it. I don't want to get too far ahead, but yeah, we ended up sleeping together, and it was kind of like, well, whatever. And I think this is true. I have checked into it, but he was on his medications so religiously that the risk to me was considered to be nothing. And I'm fine. I've been tested. So praise God for that. But yeah, after that happened, and after he left from that visit, like, I said goodbye to him and I said, you'll never see me again. And I didn't ever see him again. But it kind of started a chain reaction where I think I was already like this, but it became really obvious in the way I started to live my life next, because I just went from situation to situation looking for affirmation from people and like even went back and visited my boyfriend. We talked about things like he still wanted to be back together. And I entertained it because it felt good that he still wanted me, but didn't end up happening. But yeah, I just was like looking for somebody to make me feel good about myself. And along the way, I think I feel so horrible. Like I treated these people not nice at all. I think that guy was actually really interested in me, but I really didn't care much about him. Left Tucson was fun, and then I came to California. I remember this was actually when I was back in Tucson, but I remember a friend of mine got married, and I went to her wedding, and at the wedding, like I feel like I ruined the night before her wedding because I just broke down and cried about all my problems because I was so sad that she was getting married and like I was nowhere near it, and I was just like sleeping around with people, and she had what I wanted, but I didn't feel like I would ever earn that or deserve that because I felt the kind of guy that I wanted to marry wouldn't want me now.
So you're now looking at yourself as just like, and this is an old saying from purity culture, or whatever, damage goods or whatever. Is that like really how you saw yourself? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like the kind of guy I wanted wouldn't want me. I knew that. And not so much just because of what I had done, but just like the life, the way I was living my life. I just felt like I didn't have anything to offer. And I knew it at the time. And looking back, it's very clear to me. I wasn't adding anything, but I felt like I sucked the life out of anyone I was near. Like I was so needy, so weepy all the time. Just I didn't have anything to offer anybody.
So two questions. Number one, like even the way you were living, while it may have been fun in the moment, you were not having a good time.
No, not at all. But it was like, I was upset that I wasn't getting what I wanted the good girl way. So it was like, I'm just going to go get what I want now. It's not happening by being good. So am I going to be 50 before someone has sex with me? So that was part of the thought. I'm just going to go do it then. This is never going to happen being good.
And then second question, are you just hiding out from God at this point?
Oh, yeah. I tried a few times. That's how I know I couldn't pray. I had tried a few times. I just could not. I'd allow others to pray for me, but I could not pray for myself.
Just because the mental block was like, he doesn't, like, do you remember what it was?
I do remember asking myself, like, do I even believe in God? I remember making the decision that I wasn't an Adventist anymore because I didn't want to put that out there and have someone be like, are you really? Because I knew I wasn't living the way an Adventist should live. But when I pondered whether or not God existed, I knew that he did. I couldn't not believe in God. Right. But I wasn't comfortable being an Adventist at that point. I left Tucson, Arizona, and I came to California a broken person.
Why are you laughing? You're like, I was devastated. No.
No. So I was so broken. That's just important to know. I carried on my life thinking that I'll never get the kind of man or relationship that I want because I'm broken. And I was basically going to take like whatever I could get. So that's kind of where I was at mentally when I got to California. And I would say it's true that I found that I had value based on what I could offer with my body. That's what I had learned through my experiences so far. I was starting to have experiences where I was just trying to look for my satisfaction wherever I could find it. And I mm-hmm. found value in what I could offer with my body. That was what was getting me what I thought I wanted.
And I think that's how we learn. Like, we learn when we experience something and then we get either a reward or some pain is taken away, right? Like, and so we think, oh, this is an answer. If I'm in this kind of relationship or I offer this, this person thinks very highly of me or they give me value. And I've been searching for that. Somehow a lot of it has been taken away, right? And I'm able to, I'm important again. And remember, like, this is what you've wanted. Yes. So you want to be an important person to somebody or to something or to have value. And so you're learning this. Obviously, this will not, I don't know the end of your story, but this is how we learn and we get addicted to things in life. It's the reward system. Oh, I don't feel as bad anymore. So this is an answer.
And that's the thing, in the moment with all these experiences that I collected on my way, I felt good for a few moments, but it never felt good like for a lasting period of time. It was always fleeting. But it did take me a while to realize, hey, the return I'm getting for the heartache that I'm getting is not worth it. Like, it's not an it's not a good investment. My return is not, it's not adding up.
Yeah. So you were in a few different relationships or did you, like, what happened?
Yeah, I was just kind of, I didn't think that I was going to get what I truly wanted, which was a really nice guy who cared about me and treated me well. Because I thought I was, as you say, trash.
I don't refer to people as trash.
No, I've heard you say that before. Like, but yeah, I was, in my opinion, I was trash now. And the kind of guy that I really wanted and the kind of relationship that I wanted was no longer available to me. And it seems so unattainable. So I was basically, just looking for whatever I could find that would make me not feel so lonely.
That's sad.
Yeah, I felt really sad a lot of the time. I was very depressed.
Dang. So what'd you decide to do? The plan was to get some happiness somehow.
Yeah. And I don't think it was like a conscious thing, but looking back, it was that was definitely what was happening. So I went to a new travel assignment as I was doing. I just kept moving to different places and like leaving a path of destruction. And I ended up meeting somebody else. And this time it was an opportunity, really, is what happened. I met somebody at work and it was the way we met was not, it didn't feel okay. I'm getting lost now. It didn't feel like it was fair. And I'll just tell you the quick story. We were like in a room with a patient. This person was a doctor and I was a nurse and I was helping them wrap up this broken leg. And the patient was Spanish speaking. And this doctor is somebody that I wasn't really friends with and I didn't really think was that nice of a person, but he's asking me questions about myself as we worked. And, near the end of fixing this leg or wrapping it up anyway, he asked me, so when are we going to go out? And it just really took me off guard, to where I felt like I couldn't say no. And so I just kind of threw out a day of the week that I was free. And so we went on a date and it was whatever. I felt like I needed to honor whenever anyone asked me out, was like, oh, well, that takes a lot of courage. So I'm going to say yes most of the time. And so we went out on a couple dates, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted. I knew he wasn't someone I was interested in. So I kind of tried to end it. But I wasn't successful. And I think it's because he was so persistent. When I told him, like, yeah, thank you, but no, thank you, he just kept texting me. And it was like he didn't hear me when I said, I don't see this going anywhere. So I, being very lonely and just not feeling good about myself, was very flattered yet again by attention. And it just turned, it, one thing led to another, and we were hanging out again. And I kind of approached this relationship. I mean, I did not think of it as a relationship. I approached it as like, this is another fling. This is another way that I'm going to find a little bit of happiness, or like a way to feel good about myself. But it was not like a typical relationship. I did not ask him questions. Like, we didn't get to know each other like you might get to know someone that you're dating intentionally. And so, yeah, that's how that kind of started. At this point, I was hiding from my family. I was not talking to them really at all. I don't think they knew anything that was going on with me. And because I was really ashamed, I was embarrassed. This is not the life that I wanted them to know that I was living. And I definitely didn't want them to know about this guy that I was seeing, because he just wasn't the type that I would see.
Is this kind of like denial? Like, I can't really say that this is an actual relationship, because if it is, this is stupid.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Because like, this.
So I just push it to the side, and and this is just the thing that's happening. This isn't my boyfriend, or this isn't like a long-term plan. It's kind of denying it.
That's a really good way of putting it. Like, a lot of the stuff that was happening felt to me like if I didn't say it to anyone, it was like it didn't happen. And if no one knew about it, like, it wasn't real. And I could just keep just having my little like secret fun. And as long as no one knew, it was like it didn't happen.
That's another way we deal with stupid things. And you know what I'm saying? Is like, we deny that we're actually doing those stupid things, and we push it down. It's like we're suppressing this idea. So, because we don't want to actually deal with, like, is this a good idea?
Oh,
and you're like, oh, well, I'm not even making this decision. 100%. This is just happening to me.
Yeah, because if I talked to somebody that I trusted and that knew my, like, who I really am, I would have just broke down in tears and like at what my life had become. And that's kind of what happened. So I wasn't talking to anybody, but like time passed, substantial amounts of time, and I was still hanging out with this guy that I didn't really like. I didn't think he treated other people very well, and he treated me okay at first, but over time I started noticing that I just didn't really respect him as a person. And the problem was, I just didn't think I deserved more. Every now and then I'd go away for a weekend, or I had a really good friend living in the area. So I'd see her, and we would talk, and those honest moments would happen because she knew me really well. And I would probably like start crying, or, you know, make some kind of confession to her, and saying it out loud made it real. And I would realize, what on earth am I doing? Like, I'm with this guy. I never thought I'd be living this life where I'm just kind of like not caring about how I treat others or how I'm treating myself. And so I would break up with this guy. And we broke up like at least 5, maybe 6 times over a 1 to 2 year period. Cause I would always have clarity when I was away from him. But when I was with him, I lost myself. It was like I had no thoughts of my own, and I just kind of like went, I flitted along on the breeze. Yeah. And it was actually my best friend who like really planted the seed that there is a problem, because one of the breakups, like, I don't know what number, but there had been a few already. I had clarity after spending a weekend with her, and I asked her if she would come with me while I like told him I was leaving and got my stuff out of his house. And so I did that, and she sat in the car because I didn't think I could do it. And then I went back to him like I had done so many times. And she told me that she could no longer be my friend because it was just too much for her to watch me continue to go through it and then say how unhappy I was and like, you know, wonder why I'm doing this and then go back to him. And so to me, that was like, wow, like this must really be a real problem if my friend says she can't even be around for that.
So with that revelation, what did you think?
So it planted a seed, but it wasn't enough to make me like stay away from him yet.
Because of the reward system, there was still some reward. There was still some feeling of value.
Yeah, and again, there's that lie that there's nothing better for me. And he would say that to me when we would break up, and that he would say to me, you're not going to find anyone better than me. This is what life is when people are together. You're just young and you don't realize this is how things are. He was quite a bit older than me, so that kind of played into it, I think. Like, well, he must know. He's lived life. He was a doctor, and so
he must know. He's telling me he's the best, so he probably knows what the best is.
Yeah, but there was this like uneven power dynamic that, looking back, I know played a role. But yeah, I did. I took his word as truth instead of maybe a better truth I could have had. So to make it. I'm glossing over a lot of it, but I don't want to gloss over the fact that it came to a point where every time my period came, I would think to myself, I made it without getting pregnant. I need to leave. I need to get out. And I actually did get pregnant, and it didn't go well between us. The way he reacted to it was foreshadowing for sure of how he was going to treat me later. And it ended up being just I had a really early miscarriage. And I should have heeded like the warning of that.
Isn't that a crazy idea that you're like, I need to get out of this relationship, but I have to make sure I have a period, because if we're pregnant, then it'll be good. I'll stay, or like I
no,
have to.
No, it wasn't like if I'm like I need to find out if I am or not. I would just realize, oh man, I made it another month without getting pregnant. I need to leave. Like I scraped by again. It wasn't like, oh, if I'm pregnant, I'll stay and it'll be okay.
Right.
It was okay. Like, oh, it was like a little monthly reminder, like get out. You made it. Which is crazy to me because of what ultimately happened. But I think this all shows how low I was. I really did not think there was anything better. I thought my ship had sailed by now. A couple of years had passed, and like we had a history now, like no one can deny history, right? We've been together on and off for a couple of years. And all my friends by now were like had been married to their like really nice husbands for a while. I really thought like the ship had sailed. I was gonna be like an old maid. I was forgotten. There was no more good guys left.
Yeah, the lie of lack.
Mm-hmm.
that this is it for you. So you might as well, you made your bed, so you might as well sleep in this
and yeah.
take what you get and don't complain.
Yeah. I remember things were not going very well at home. I was living with him by the end. There was a couple final events that happened at home that made me realize that I needed to leave, and it wasn't a situation I could tolerate. And so I did actually break up with him again and got my own place and took steps to separate myself from him, and made the fatal mistake of getting together with him just to talk about what went wrong. Seems so innocent. And again, the manipulation, like, you're never going to find someone better than me. Like, look at our history. Look at all we have. Are you really going to throw that away? And I had very like wavering confidence in myself and really questioned it. And we ended up back in bed, and I didn't know it at the time, but I got pregnant again. We weren't together, but we were, you know, we were kind of like texting and stuff. And yeah, I found out I was pregnant. And
what'd you think?
I was not surprised. It was kind of like I had accepted my fate by then. I was like, there's no way I can get out of this. Somehow I always end up back with this person. And this time when I was pregnant, he treated me like really nice. The first time I was pregnant, he like didn't believe me and like was pretty cold. This time he was like in awe and like wonderment. And we went and bought a camera together so he could take pictures of my growing belly, and kind of was supportive. And that was enough for me to think, we're going to do this together and it's going to be okay. Very stark contrast to the previous little pregnancy scare I had, where I felt more alone than I've ever felt in my life. So we were going to do it. We weren't living together, but we were like acting like people who were expecting a child together and were excited about it. And that lasted for like a week. He had a trip planned with his family. He has other children. And so they already had like a vacation plan to go to Hawaii. And I was going to go, but I wasn't feeling well because I was pregnant. And I happened to have a conversation with a friend where I got clarity, which is always what happened when I talk to anyone outside of the situation. And she said, I told her like my doubts, my fears, and she didn't know I was pregnant, but she said, why would you go on vacation with his family if you're not sure about him? That sends the wrong message to him. And that's just confusing for you. And I was like, wow, she's so right. And she didn't even know I was pregnant, I don't think. And so I stayed back. They went to Hawaii and I didn't go. And while he was gone, it hit me, you know, all the truth of what was happening hit me. And I realized I don't want a child born to this woman that I am. I don't want this person, whoever this is, to be his mom. I didn't know it was a boy at the time, but I don't want this lady to be any kid's mom. I am not proud of her. She doesn't know who she is. She has no standards, morals, character. She's got nothing. I do not want this for any child. And I was able to, you know, like I had the strength to make choices for this baby that I didn't have the strength to make for myself, which is so sad because I had, you know, I just didn't think I was worth it. But this little baby was, praise God.
The enemy is just like, you're trash, and we just believe them.
Yeah.
And we make decisions based on that.
Yeah, and I get so scared when I think about what would have happened if I hadn't gotten pregnant with my son. Who knows? Like, I have no idea. I said this to Eddie once. I said, I don't know, like, I might still be with him feeling horrible. And Eddie, you know how Eddie gets? He was like weeping. He's like, he would have found you, girl. He would have found you. And I believe that. Like, if it wasn't through this, it would have been some way. But yeah, so I decided I'm not staying. I've got to make a change. And I knew I had to make a geographic change because I had never been able to be successful being away from this man for any length of time yet. So I needed to like be extreme. So I quit my job. I gave my 2 weeks notice. He's like barely left for Hawaii. Gave my 2 weeks notice and made plans to move in with my parents in North Carolina from California. And so, yeah, I did that. I don't know if you have questions at this point, but.
So, yeah, you're this pregnancy almost like changes your life. Not good. So your plan was like, we're going to just do it, me and the kid. We're not going to be involved with this person anymore.
It's so weird. I don't have a super clear memory on that. There were so many thoughts swirling. And I think it's important to note that I thought about my options very briefly. What were my options? There's abortion. But I breezed over it because of how I've been raised and it just didn't seem like an option. But I thought about adoption. I thought about giving him up because there are people really close to me who at the time were desperately trying to have a child of their own and had been unable so far. So there was this tremendous guilt that this happened, whoops, and that there are people who actually wanted a baby right now. I mean, I wanted a baby. I desperately wanted a child and the whole thing, but not like this. Not with this person.
Is God just like completely out of the picture, or was he like somewhere in there, kind of like the wrong version of him shaming you and the right version of him comforting you?
Interesting. He was there. I know that. I don't know if I thought about him, but I did feel comfort in the fact that I was making changes. So I don't know if that was, you know, I'm sure the Holy Spirit was prompting my actions and like giving me peace about what I was doing. But I don't remember like in that moment specifically thinking about him. That came later.
So you were back in North Carolina.
Yeah. So I moved to North Carolina and moved in with my parents, and I changed my phone number. I requested that he not contact me. And I
at this point, did he have any idea?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. So like the week before he went on his vacation. Oh, I think I told you that. Yeah. He knew.
Oh, that's right. You did tell me that. So when you take off, was he like alarmed? You know.
So I gave my 2 weeks notice at work, but he wasn't on vacation that long. So he came back before it was up and I was still around, and I wasn't really talking to him when he was in Hawaii. So he knew something was up, and he had been like calling me constantly, like, you know, what's happening? And so I finally did tell him because he was so persistent, like, what is happening? That I did tell him, like, hey, I'm going to move and we're not going to do this together. So when he came back from Hawaii, he did come to my house and bang on my door and scare me really bad and like kind of yell and scream and ask me, like, you know, he asked me, what did I do to the baby? He assumed I had already done something, that I'd had an abortion, I think. But he was really upset, and he did not respect my request that he not contact me. He sent letters. He did all kinds of stuff. He would drive by and like stay outside the house. My landlord would see him all the time. I had to keep sending him away. it was really frightening, to the point where my sister flew out from, I think she was in Tennessee at the time, but she flew out and stayed with me, for, I don't know if she stayed for a whole week. And then when she left, my dad came out and stayed with me for the second half of the 2 weeks that I had to finish up work. So yeah, he was, I can't speak to how he felt, but he was coming across as very upset. I did.
So
I
got out.
I fled to North Carolina, and it was so good. It was like just a healing journey in North Carolina. I lived that single pregnant life with my parents. At 29 years of age, I moved back in with them, and it was the most humbling experience ever, especially moving in with my parents who live on the campus of a Adventist academy and being visibly pregnante. At first, there was that little like shame and like, oh, what are people going to think and say? I've clearly gone out into the world and gotten myself knocked up.
So let's jump ahead a little bit, unless there's some.
I want to say that the fears I had did not happen. Like, I had this shame and like fear that they were going to like treat me weird. But the Mount Pisgah Church was the first church that like I stepped back in and started going to church, and they were so, so loving. Nobody treated me weird at all.
Praise the Lord.
So that was the beginning of me being open to God.
Thank you, the saints at Mount Pisgah. Yes. Appreciate y'all. So yeah, you end up having this baby. Stuff happens. You have to end up going back and forth, but you end up.
Yeah,
back
there wasn't
in California,
any back
correct?
And forth. I just went back to California. Yeah.
And you're wanting to get back into church. I think this experience
definitely
at Mount Pisgah was
a blessing
to you.
Something about having kids. I think other people can probably relate to this. Like, you want them to have all the good things you remember growing up, and there was just no question, no discussion. Like, Finn is going to go to Sabbath school and church. And so that's what I did. Yeah. As soon as we got back to California, immediately, like he was like 7 weeks old, we were going to the Arroyo Grande Adventist Church. And same situation there. Like, they just welcomed us with open arms, and they were just so kind. And different people there offering to like stand in line with us at potluck and sit with us and holding Finn while I ate. All those things were just Jesus love to me. And I really, like, for the first time, I was seeing Christians like really live the love of Jesus. And I'm sure they were in my life before, wow. But I, like, my eyes were very opened to it, probably because I was in such a state.
And so now that God is back in the picture, you're like, okay. These people are blessing me, and this is good, and I remember all of this stuff. Do you know if you had considered, like, his character again, or you were just like, no, this is good?
Yeah, I think I was kind of back to homeostasis. Like, I was back to kind of, like, it's the God that I knew before. Like, he's good. People say he's good in the Bible. There's these miracles in the Bible, but they're not necessarily for me. But church, the people at church, like, all of this is good. And I can pray to God, but not super sure, like, that he's going to answer. Like, he'll take care of us, but, like, the personal relationship aspect, like, I wouldn't have said it at the time, but looking back, it was still kind of like, I should probably have devotionals, and like, oh, I never have time for that. And so I feel like we're never going to be close, but maybe someday I'll be close to God. I think somebody said once, like, salvation through devotionals is a thing that people like think is a thing. And I definitely was one of them.
No. Yeah. Cause that's how it, through the years, it got preached that way. First, it was preached like salvation by works, and you're like, well, that doesn't work. And you're like, well, here's one work that I can do, salvation by spending time with God, because it's
who you know, if you know somebody wrote a book like that. And so while it's a good idea, then if they don't spend time, you're like, I can just spend time. And then they're like, I can't even do that. And then guilt, shame, mm-hmm. condemnation come in again. So it gets weird if it's not salvation by the faith of Jesus Christ.
It gets weird.
So you're out there, you're doing that. When do you get a hold of that good news? Talk to me about that. I don't know how far along.
Yeah, so in the story I think I need to. We're almost there, but I think I need to just say that we moved back to California. I am not married to this man. We did have some custody things that went down over the span of a year. I was attempting to move home to be with family. I wanted my son to live close to his dad. That's why we came to California, but quickly realized that I really craved and needed the support of my family. And so we attempted to move back, for sure. But the court of law did not deem that my son was allowed to do that. So essentially, we were trapped in California is the end result, which in itself was just a whole thing that brought
like the name of a movie, Trapped in California.
Yes. But I went through a whole thing with anger at the loss of control that I had over our lives. I felt like I was trapped in prison. And that was one of like my biggest things going into freedom that will come around and become better. Don't worry. Okay. But yeah, so just feeling trapped and really upset at my son's dad for how things were turning out. And different people would say to me, like, you need to forgive him. And I tried, but found it impossible on my own.
Because your basis of forgiving him would have been what? Because you should.
That I should, and it's good for me. Yeah, but I was like, they say that, you know, feeling a certain way towards someone eats you up. Like, it's worse for you. Like, hatred or anger or any of those things, they eat you up. And it doesn't really do anything to the other person. So it was like, for my health and for me, I need to forgive him. But like, I couldn't.
You're like, cool. I cannot do that. So
yeah, like I tried. I would try, but I couldn't. And it was sort of like, I remember thinking, like, me and my son are going to get through this. We're going to rock the single mom life because I'm going to choose joy. And, you know, because we're going to choose to feel that way. And it was honestly like very toxic positivity that I was attempting.
Toxic positivity.
Haven't you heard that?
I guess maybe I have.
Yeah, it was like, things are terrible, but I'm going to have joy. And then like, I have joy. Yeah. But everyone could see through it. I was just like seething. But yeah, and then the other thought at this time was, no one's coming to save me. And that's a lie, but that was both what like spurred me onward to greatness, single motherhood greatness, and like terror. But yeah, no one's coming to save me. And so I'm going to be the best darn single joyful mother there ever was. And I made a lot of choices out of fear of what would happen to me and Finn if I did not just push through and do all the things I thought would make me the best single mom. Like, I went back to school to get my nurse practitioner. I stayed up crazy hours. I worked all the time, not when I had Finn, but like.
You're in survival mode.
Yes. Yeah. So the other thing was during this time, and I just think it's important to say it because of the life that comes later. The thing that was so upsetting is I worried a lot for my son's safety. I had left a situation that I had deemed unsafe for myself. But due to our custody arrangement, I was now forced to send our son back into a home where I had deemed unsafe for myself. And so I had a lot of issues surrounding that. And like, where is God? Like, that this is happening. And I was believing so many lies. Like, I was trying to date again. And it was like, no man can handle our situation. Or that's how it felt. And I found, honestly, a lot of value in single motherhood. Like, this is my identity. Mm-hmm. I'm just killing it. And this is what makes me great. So that's where I was at when the next part comes in that you were trying to ask me about.
Yeah, the idea that now you have an identity can turn into idolatry.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't anything, but now I have this kid. But now so much is on the line, mm-hmm. and all of your joy and your happiness is able to just get stolen by anything involving your kid.
Well, and it was like, you know, there's working, like there's merit in working. And I had grown mm-hmm. up like valuing work, which having mm-hmm. a good work ethic is great. But I really highly valued the struggle and like held it in high esteem. And it felt like I was beginning to get a track record, which I was proud of being good, because I hadn't like gone out and like slept with a man in a while, selfishly. And so now I felt like I could talk about my past with some authority and like it was behind me. That's not who I was anymore. So yeah, I was starting to feel pretty good about myself. But again, it was all like behavior oriented. Like, oh yeah, I'm back to being good and I'm getting it.
It's a little... A little self-righteousness, because you had done okay for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. I have a track record. That was important to me.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. What happens next?
Well, I think, tell us. I think what you were getting at when I kind of interrupted you to finish telling you all that was like, right. Uh-huh. Like, when did like maybe
yeah.
the truth come into my life?
How about this? I think I've heard this before.
Okay.
Did you go to school with one Edward Cornejo?
That I did. Yes. And Jayla. They were like seniors and I was like, I don't know, like freshman, sophomore.
Uh-huh.
So they were older. We weren't like buds, but I knew who they were.
And so then you saw that article a while back. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I knew of Eddie and Jayla. I was actually at their wedding because I was dating a guy who was really good friends with Eddie. So I was out there.
Wow.
I know.
That's cool.
Famous. Yeah. So I was at their wedding. And so I knew who they were. Eddie was up front. Jayla was tall and beautiful. And so this article comes out. And of course, people share articles. And I was horrified. Like,
for sure.
What is happening? Confirmation. You cannot trust anyone. It was crazy. And so I remember doing my share of like whispering about that. And then later someone told me about, I don't know if I knew it by name, but they were like, look, he's involved in this ministry. And I was just disgusted because what a perfect place to hide. Like, oh, I'm different. I'm okay now. And I'm like in this ministry.
For sure.
So just very turned off by that. And then I heard about this podcast that was like connected to the ministry that he was involved in. And I needed to know what he said on the podcast. So I started listening to it, but his episode had not actually been made yet. So I started listening to...
Oh, it had been made yet, and he was passing it around on the underground.
Oh.
Shout out to Eddie.
I did not know that. Okay.
I was like, bro, stop sharing it. That when the episode comes out, no one, everyone will have heard it.
Oh, that's so funny.
Because we recorded it. We were trying to be very careful. We recorded it like maybe over half a year before it actually
came out. Okay. Well, it has not
That's
come
just
out.
Some insider info for the DTL listeners. So you start listening to it just like because it's like linked up with this ministry that Ed mm-hmm. is a part
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I was curious about it. I did not like the first episode I listened to. So really,
let me ask you this, just for my curiosity. When you hear about a podcast called Death to Life and you understood right away, oh, it's these are different stories of different people. Like, did that sound exciting to you? Like, just for my curiosity, because I wonder how people receive the podcast at first.
Shameless pandering.
No, like, I want to know about it.
I didn't think about the podcast at all because I was there for the dirt on Eddie. So I wasn't thinking about the podcast like that. I was just thinking of it as a means to information about the gossip I'd been hearing. Like I wanted to.
Tight. That's what I wanted to hear. Love it.
Okay. And I'm sure people will come here to hear my dirt and hopefully they'll leave satisfied and smiling.
Hey, if you're listening to this episode of the Death to Life podcast, the dirt has already been passed. Now we're talking about the life. So we got you.
Joke's on you. No. So, okay. We need to get back on track, Richard.
Yeah. Sorry.
So.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I hated the first episode. Who knows why I persevered? Like, I hated it. Why did I continue listening? Eddie's episode wasn't there. Actually, I do know why. I saw some names in there I recognized. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I know that name. Floor.
Who were they?
Well, Floor.
Oh, Floor.
Yeah, because I knew who she was from Southern. And I was like, oh, well, she's on here. I got to listen to hers. And as soon as I listened to Floor's, I was like, okay, I need to listen to more because now it has legitimacy. This is a good podcast. Like, I really enjoyed her episode.
A lot of tea in her episode. Her episode came out and it was just like a bomb exploding.
Wow.
People were like, whoa. What is going on? They really were.
Yeah.
They messaged
me. It was good. And I had no idea any of that. I just remembered seeing her at Southern. Uh-huh. But what happened as I listened to it is, do you remember I told you how when I was a kid, there were miracles in the stories I would read, but like, you know, no miracles for me. But as I was listening to it, I was starting to realize the gospel is exactly as compelling as I had hoped. Like, wait, this is happening now and it's not the Bible. Like, this is cool. Yeah, it was like, wow, it actually can transform people. This is attractive. I can get on board with this. I can get behind this. Like, whereas kind of what I had settled into, I'm not saying this is like what's true or what people are trying to convey to me, but what had sunk in my experience so far was God is there, but he's not as there as you want him to be, is how I felt. So I was listening to the podcast. I was really enjoying being in the Love Reality Facebook group. The next.
You even joined our Facebook group without Eddie's episode.
Yeah.
Out?
Yeah. Like,
man, you got sucked in.
I don't even know how I came into it either, but yeah, I joined the group because I was enjoying like the discussions. Well, I didn't know about them yet, but I joined it and then enjoyed the discussions. So when I listened to Justin Goodwin's episode, right, I was able to go in the group and ask questions about what I was starting to learn from that. And his episode was really instrumental for me because it made me think about forgiveness in light of the new gospel that I was hearing. Mm-hmm. And thought about it, yeah, in terms of my own situation for the first time. And I
was really sad about Justin Goodwin's episode. Because I love Justin Goodwin. I think he's one of my favorite people on earth. And we messed up the sound for that episode. And it was like we're both underwater.
I remember you saying that, but it didn't sound like that to me.
And when you said that, it was just, I felt like God was encouraging me that
No, I like really because I loved the story so yeah. much. And then you said, oh, it was huge for me. And that made, that was such an encouraging, that was so encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number 55, Justin dies to control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. And actually, that was what I was afraid of because we were having some technological difficulties when we started mine. I was like, no. but no, I.
So this idea of him forgiving was very powerful.
Yeah, his story has some like parallels and similarities to mine, just in that, yeah, he had somebody that he tried really hard to forgive and wasn't able to in his own power. And just hearing him explain, you know, how it's just like the parable of the unforgiving servant, that we have been forgiven so much. How can we not turn around and extend it? Like, it's just impossible. And so I started thinking about that. And I talked with Elias on the Facebook group, and he like further fleshed it out for me that like, yeah, I'm so forgiven. I can't help but extend it to him. Like if you turn on a faucet and it's just like overflowing. And it, I realized that was true for me too. I couldn't help it. I know what I've done. Like I've done some horrible things and yet I'm forgiven. And I had that experience of being a really good person and then a quote unquote bad person. And if I'm forgiven, then anyone who's done anything bad is forgiven. Even this man in my life who had hurt me so badly, he's forgiven. And then if I keep thinking about how he's forgiven, then it like emphasizes how much, again, I must be forgiven. And I think I'm trying to think how to like effectively communicate this because it's like, it was just such a life-changing thing. Like knowing that bad people are forgiven is partly an assurance of myself being forgiven, like murderers, like rapists, all that. Anybody who's wronged anybody is equally forgiven because it happened way back on the cross. It's available to everyone. I mean, they have to receive it. But yeah, there is so much freedom for me in the knowledge that this man is just as loved and forgiven as I am. And this gift is available to him. And it changed, that changed everything.
Wow.
Yeah. So Eddie actually reached out to me because he saw me posting in the group. And that was so cool because then I had like a personalized tour guide through all these concepts. And so Eddie and I started talking about different things. And
was that weird at first? Or had you already been like, okay, I think that the gospel is legit. And so then Eddie isn't like a...
No, yeah, it wasn't really weird because I had already like, I think by the time we started talking, his episode had come out. And I'd seen him on Internet Church and I don't know. So it was just kind of cool to talk to him again. But like he did the whole like, what's your relationship to sin? What's your word? Or like, what's your lie? And we prayed and I was so nervous, like, oh, what's it going to be? Is he really going to speak to me? And I came up with the word striving. And then he's like, well, what's it, you know, what's that going to turn into? Or what's the truth? And it, and my truth was I'm thriving. And it just felt too corny. But then Eddie was like, if I can share what I heard, I didn't hear striving. I heard the word fear. And that, I think is really true. That's the biggest lie, like throughout a lot of what happened with me was the lie of like fear. Like I need to be afraid. Like what's going to happen to me and Finn? No one's coming to save me. It's all on me. I may be alone forever. No man can handle this situation. I'm like, I'm never going to find that relationship that I was craving, so many fears. And he addressed that thing that I had been saying was, which was no one's coming to save me with Jesus came to save me, which just felt like obvious, but I'd never thought of it like that. But yeah, Jesus came to save me. And so from that conversation forward, I believe the Holy Spirit was teaching me how to rest, because I've been working so hard, just trying to make it. And so, yeah, I stopped going to school. I'm not done. I'm not sure if I'll finish, but like, I just put that on pause because I don't feel like I have to do it to be okay now, because Jesus came to save me. I don't have to go to school.
Everybody drop out of school. Jesus came to save you. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, you saw that your motivation was a weird motivation. And
yeah.
You're like, oh, I don't have to live like
that. It was fear-based. And maybe I do want to finish at some point, but for now, sure. I'm enjoying resting. So, yeah. So Eddie helped me with that. And then like further, like I think I talked about how I had this picture of God as a gumball machine. Like I really thought like he should be giving me what I'm praying for, what I'm asking for. And that's how it works. And so there was this one incident where my son lost like his favorite Lego. And I was like, oh, great teaching moment. And I was like, okay, Finn, we're going to pray to Jesus and he's going to tell us where it is. And so we prayed and I got this like feeling in my mind that it was in like the drawer of the Lego table. So I opened it up and it was not there. And I was
like, oh God, yeah, my son's watching.
I know. That's exactly. I was like, okay, I'm so nervous. God, you better come through. And then I was so mad because it wasn't there. I'm like, what the heck was that? Why did you like make me think that it might be here? And then Finn like found it under the couch. But that just like threw me that like I asked for this. Why did you not come through for me the way I thought you were going to, God? And I talked to Eddie about it and he's like, well, did you find the Lego? I was like, yeah, but not how I expected. And he was like, then thank him. And so, yeah, that changed again the way I think about God. He is not a gumball machine to give me exactly what I ask for. Because if he removed experiences in our lives, it would remove the opportunity to have faith in him. There would be no need for faith or trust. And so, yeah, I was just growing in this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was good. So moving forward, if you want me to, something else.
Sure.
This is all like, this part of the, in this segment, we will go through things Eddie says. This is called What Eddie Says. The other thing that we talked about, because I was struggling with my son's father. I had gone through the forgiveness, but something else that Eddie said was, so like 1 Corinthians 13 talks about love. And in verse 7 it says, love bears all things, believes all things, and endures all things. I was really struggling with how do I treat this man? Sure, I forgive him, but like I have to interact with him and raise a child with him. And so he said, love always hopes. And so what I can do is I can hope good things over this man. Jesus loves this man, and this man bears his image. Like even him is an image bearer. And thinking of him that way just, again, changes how I think about him and how my heart feels about him. And Jason Dull's episode recently, you guys were talking about how his dad was just deceived. Like he was,
what a wild episode that one was.
Like his dad was manipulative, and did all these things trying to like get what he thought he needed. Well, he like what he wanted, but did it in like a backwards way to get what he wanted. And you said he's deceived. He just doesn't know how loved he is. So again, that was another thing I learned that I can apply to my situation, understanding that probably this man that has done so many things to myself and to my son that are negative, understanding that he is deceived. He does not know how loved he is. And in his treatment of others is it's an extension of the deception that he's living in. And because I'm free from offense, it's okay. It's not okay, but it's okay. You know?
In the sense that things in life can be offensive.
Yeah.
But we don't have to be offended. We know, yeah, that's not right. But we don't wake up in the morning that everybody does us right. We wake up to to shine, to glorify God.
Yeah. And so kind of to build on that, I talked to Christian when I was in North Carolina like a month or so ago. And we were talking about, I don't know how this topic came up, but I talked about how I've been growing in this forgiveness of him and figuring out like what does this look like going forward? And somehow it came up like about praying for him. And I said, well, I've contemplated it, but I haven't actually done it yet. And he said, if you prayed for him, would anything like, if he changed, would it be because you prayed for him? And the answer is no, I don't think so.
Hmm.
But praying for him changes my heart. Like maybe he'll change. Maybe he'll come around if I pray for him. It's because of the goodness of God, not because of anything I did. But praying for him is good for my heart. And so I was able to start saying little prayers for this man that's hurt me so much. And then the other, I always cry about this one. So I had like the way Finn came about for me was always a little bit difficult. Just the events surrounding how he was conceived and just the whole situation. And I was really struggling with that. And what Eddie helped me understand was that Finn was not the result of a careless night of selfish passion. He is the byproduct of God's loving heart, who saw him before the world was created, and he saw Finn for himself and for me. And Finn was not an accident turned into a good thing, as I was like thinking this whole time. He was intended from the beginning. And that just like really wrecks me to think about that. How much God loves this little boy of mine. Because he's his. He's God's kid. God wanted him and saw him from the beginning. And so it changes like the way I think about the whole thing. Like it wasn't, you know, if I think about it just like I made horrible choices. Like, yeah, it sounds horrible. But when I think about God planning Finn, it changes everything. It makes it more wonderful. And yeah. And so that helps me with the question I struggled with so much, which is my son safe when he's not with me? When I send him away from me, which I have to do 50% of the time, send him to a home where I deemed I was not safe. Is he safe? And the answer is yes, because he's God's. He's mine, but he's God's first. And God goes with him wherever he goes. And so Finn is no less safe when he's not with me than he is when he's with me, because God is with him all the time. And yes, it's my duty to protect him and to raise him as best I can, but that's literally out of my hands half the time. And so when he's not with me, he's with his other parent, God, and his dad. But he's no less safe when he's not with me. And that's been really huge. Yeah.
Wow. So as we're wrapping this thing up, it's making me, you know, usually I want to ask, if we go back in time or something. But as I'm thinking about it now, let's go to the future for a second. And Finn, who before the foundation of the world was predestined to be holy and blameless before his Father in heaven. It's always been the plan for Finn and God to be reconciled, right? But let's go to the future for a second, and Finn hasn't seen it. Like, the enemy has lied to Finn. The enemy has positioned Finn in lack. And you get to come across Finn, and he comes to you, and you can see, like, the circumstances are making him believe something weird about himself. And he's made some mistakes in his life, and they're making him feel like he's less than. And you know, maybe because you're his mom, it's like, Mom, I know this stuff, but yet you still get to speak life over him. Mm. What do you tell this guy?
Oh, my. What a question. Yeah, that's a good question. And I think about this a lot because I'm not able to raise my son sheltered like I am. I have to think not what if someday he's exposed to pornography, or what if someday, you know, he may, like, whatever, bad things happen. They are going to happen. Like, that's just a fact. Because it, oh, so much is out of my control, really is. And I would probably read him that verse. What is it? Ephesians 1:4-6. Even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him. In love, he predestined us for adoption to himself as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will, to the praise of his glorious grace, with which he has blessed us in the beloved. I hope I read that all right. But Finn, honey, this is how I talk to him. Honey, God knew you before you were even, like, before I even knew about you. God knew about you. And he really, really wanted you here because he really liked you. And he knew, like, what a cool kid you are. And just what a sweet boy you would be, and what a joy you would be to everyone around you. And there's nothing you can do to make me love you less. And there's nothing you can do to make me love you more. And the same is true about God. God loves you all the time, even when you're making choices that aren't the best choices. And even when you make the best of the best choices, that doesn't change about how God feels about you. And that's the same way that I feel about you too, honey. I think that's what I would say to him. And I think I saw you doing this in a video with your kids. You were asking them, is there anything that you can do that makes me love you less or more? And I started doing that with Finn, and it melts my heart when he says, no, it's the best. Yeah. And I just, can I add, I feel like we're wrapping up, but I wanted to say, like, we've talked about how I felt like there's no miracles for me. The Bible is great, but, like, it wasn't personal. I've been looking for a miracle. Like, I ask God all the time, like, when are you going to help us? Is there any help for us? And I keep, yeah, just hoping and waiting for a miracle. But the Holy Spirit put in my mind, like, a couple weeks ago, what if the miracle is that I am walking in peace right now in this situation? What if that is the miracle?
None of this was written in stone, that you were one day going to receive God's love and you were going to be able to forgive the people that hurt you the most and there would be reconciliation with your father. It wasn't written in stone that this was going to happen, Jody, but it has happened. I think you see God for who he is. I think you've received his love. Like, it's a miracle. because when that happens, heaven rejoices. Mm-hmm. And we think of miracles as like the lion's mouths being shut, or the Red Sea parting, or the axe head floating. But those are things where God's just like, you know I can do that. But all he can do in regards to humans is just love them with an everlasting love. And he will love them with an everlasting love, and they still might not receive it. So whenever somebody does receive it, heaven rejoices. So what's a bigger miracle? The axe head floating, or Jody seeing, oh, I'm loved with an everlasting love, and now I can love, and I can forgive, and I will, and I do. Mm-hmm. What do you think's a bigger miracle? When heaven rejoices? I think so.
Yeah. No, I'm just crying, so I have nothing to add. It's a miracle.
Thank you for sharing your story with us at the Death to Life podcast. It's humbling that the Death to Life podcast has brought you to the Death to Life podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It was about a year ago, like almost exactly a year ago, that I started listening to it.
Oh, praise the Lord.
Nice full circle moment. That feels nice.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you, Richard.
God is pouring down. I've seen your faithful hand. No need to worry about my life. Peace of mind and knowing I'm found. I'm found. It's only you, it's only me. Waking up to a memory. Better for me, and you are I found rest is complete. No one else can.